Hey, Billy, why don't we tell them what we're about, man?
So we're here to welcome you to the Madhouse Chronicles. It's a talk show with myself, Billy Morrison.
And me, Ozzy Osbourne.
This man, Prince of Darkness. And we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Come and join Ozzy and myself. Visit osbournemediahouse.com to get special access to...
Come on!
What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Happy fucking New Year, drinking buddies. 2018, we've survived. It's amazing. Before we get into it this week, just a quick word from our sponsors, the people that make this shit happen. This week we are brought to you by the fine folks at Laughable. Laughable is the number one comedy podcast app on iOS. Not only can you subscribe to your favorite show, your favorite artist, you get recommendations, you can buy tickets to comedy shows in-app. For our listeners that use Android, I keep promising, it's coming soon. So go to www.laughable.com, get on the waiting list if you're an Android user. If you're an iOS user, go to the App Store, search Laughable, download it today. It's what I listen to fucking podcasts on. It's fucking amazing. Our guest this week is comedian Richard Hunter. Richard is the co-host of Phone Booth Fighting with Frank Mir. It's an MMA podcast. He's a real interesting dude. Just, a little warning, we do get a bit political this week about gun control and shit like that. But we also talk about where we were the night Dimebag Daryl died, Frank's upcoming fights, and a whole bunch of shit. So this is one of the more sober shows ever done since we were drinking coffee. Unbeknownst to Richard, I may have had a few before showing up to do the show. Also, guys, do us a huge solid. If you listen on iTunes, even if you don't listen on iTunes, if you have an iTunes account, go to iTunes, rate us 5 stars, help get us up in the charts. Higher we are in the charts, better the guests we can get, bigger the show gets, more drinking buddies. That's what we all want. So, thanks, guys. Enjoy the show.
YouTube is a bunch of bastards.
That's right.
Impeding our free speech. Richard, how you been?
Good, man. Are we rolling? Are we happening? Okay.
We are rolling.
Thanks for having me on, and now we drink. I hope the definition of the title is broad-based, because I'm just enjoying a grande drip coffee here. Is that okay?
It's more than fine. You're not our first teetotaler.
Oh, is that right?
We had Hell Sparks on not too long ago.
Oh, yes. You know what? I'm so glad you brought that up, because I saw that. I was excited to see you had Hal on, and I wanted to mention that next time I saw you. You know, Hal and I are really, really true, great lifelong friends. And we met many years ago through my radio show. And we have a lot of things in common like that, from, you know, politics to love of music to we were born 1 week apart, to both of our favorite members of KISS is Paul Stanley. So
very cool.
Doesn't get any closer than that.
No, not at all. I thought I was kind of close to them. We went to rival high schools.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wait, now you went to, from Chicago, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you guys.
Yeah, he went to the rival high school, my high school. His high school is actually in our fight song, like Beat New Trier is in our fight.
Oh, wow. Did not know that. Well, I'm glad to see the two of you guys could overlook your differences and build a bridge. I wanted to ask you, though, this is your podcast and I'm interviewing you. I promise I won't do this the whole show. But you guys met up out at like a pod fest or something,
the LA
right?
Pod fest.
What is that like? I've thought about doing that before. Is it cool?
I enjoy it. This is my second year going. It's great. A lot of live performances.
Mm-hmm.
They give an opportunity for the smaller shows to set up and record there too.
Okay, I like that. Is there a lot of talk of RSS feeds and unique downloads and stuff like that?
There is some of the technology, seminars too.
Great.
Like, one of the guys from Libsyn went over, like, how to improve your sound, shit like that.
Okay. I need one of the guys from Libsyn to explain to me what's happening with their... Do you use Libsyn?
I do. And I actually did have them explain what the hell happened with my numbers.
Okay, good. Well, you know, I don't know if you want to bore your listeners with that, but at the very least, explain it to me when we get off the air, because... That, boy, you know, people think podcasting is glamorous, Matt. You know, they see the social media pictures of us, womanizing and carousing out all hours of the night in the club, as the kids say. But they don't realize that behind the scenes, it's nothing but fretting over RSS feeds.
Oh, yeah. No, I watch my numbers take a horrible backslide when they made those patches. I'm like, what the hell's happening here?
Yeah.
What's Yes. We're doing so good.
Yes. Yeah. Now, do your listeners know your correlation to my Phone Booth Fighting podcast with Frank Mir?
Definitely plugged the hell out of it.
Okay, I appreciate that. Well, you've been
a
guest.
Already.
It has been. Time flies. You came out to the Orpheum Theater for one of Eddie Bravo's jiu-jitsu tournaments. We were broadcasting live out there for EBI, and you sat in on the show with us. You very kindly contributed to our Fund Anything campaign, and which was, you know, that was great as far as raising money to help support the show, but it was also nice because we made some good friends like yourself along the way.
Definitely. You know, we hung out at AVN a little bit.
We did. Now, are you up for some sort of award?
I actually am.
Okay. Did I read this correctly that it's like a non-acting? Non-sex role?
Up for best non-sex performance this year.
Okay. And you played a rabbi or something? Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. Now,
I'm sure my listeners are sick of hearing about it because everyone's been bringing
it up. Well, just imagine if you win.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is just for getting nominated. Well, congratulations on that. I have not seen your cinematic debut. What's the title? What should I look for?
Jews Love Black Cock.
Right. Okay.
So the plot of the movie is my daughters, I hire a matchmaker to set all my daughters up with nice Jewish boys.
Sure.
Turns out.
J-date.
Yeah.
Okay.
Turns out they're all whores and they all love Black Hawk.
Right. Okay. Now, who plays your Jewish daughters?
Jennifer White, Rizzo Ford.
Rizzo Ford. She was in Greece. No?
No.
Okay.
Though her name does come from that. But
yeah. Okay. Jennifer White. Boy, Jennifer White. There is a nod to a traditional approach to your porn persona. I don't know who that is, but let me just compliment her on naming herself something that's plausible.
Right, just something that could pass by every day. Like, oh, hey, it's Jennifer White. No big deal.
So you had your Jewish daughters were Jennifer White, Rizzo Ford,
Taurus Angel, Abella Danger. And I'm probably spacing on...
Man, you had a big family.
Oh.
Jewish, slutty family.
The joke is I have 23 daughters or something like that.
Oh, wow.
So okay. They're making sequels.
Yeah. Oh, well, of course. Yeah. Okay. And so you did that, and then it backfired on you.
Yeah. Because all my daughters are whores.
Right. Okay. Well, now I've got to see it. And I know it's out of theaters at this point, so I'll probably just have to go on...
when we get off here, I'll show you the trailer.
Amazon. Oh, yes. Great. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool.
But
now, what company did that?
Burning Angel.
Oh, Joanna Angel's company.
Yeah.
Joanna,
of course, stars in it as the Jewish matchmaker.
I know Joanna Angel. She used to do my radio show all the time. Through a couple of degrees of separation here, I think tell you a Joanna Angel story that pertains to both your content and mine.
Awesome.
So,
Joanna was in an MMA match?
No. But
she did box at Ellis Mania.
Oh, she did do that. I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah, she fought Nikki Hartz this year.
No, she used to come to my LA house party every year. I'd either rent like a hotel suite or I'd do it at someone's house out there. And once a year, I would have this broadcast where all the actors and musicians and porn people and athletes, whoever, that were regular associates of my radio show would come out and we would set up just like you and I are sitting around. By the way, welcome to my hood here.
This isn't far from my old place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, here in Summerlin. My house is just down the street. But we would sit around like this, have four or five mics on the table, and it was like a cocktail party wired for sound. And we would just record the conversations, whatever happened. And so Joanna, I remember one year in particular, did a panel with myself and... Tommy Chong and Jose Canseco. That was the table.
Wow, and that's an interesting mix.
Yeah, and I something interesting came up though, because we were talking about Lenny Bruce, because I have a real reverence for Lenny Bruce, and anytime I make a Jewish friend, I drop his name. And so I was talking about this old Lenny Bruce bit that he used to do about how his mother worried that because he had a tattoo, he could not be buried in a Jewish cemetery. And I told Joanna, I said, I think you're in big trouble. And so about 6 months later, her grandma died or something, but she was at a Jewish cemetery and she had the presence of mind to ask the gravedigger if that was going to be an issue. And he said, nah, we don't care.
Yeah, they'll just take your money.
Yeah. So she I think she texted me and let me know that everything was okay. Her mortal soul was not in jeopardy.
See, for me, I've always been like, I'll be dead. Won't care.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good. Well, I'm excited. I hope you win that thing. And I'm going to throw the phone booth fighting listener support behind you. Well, if you're putting up, is there voting closed? Is there going to be voting?
It's not a fan voted award.
Oh, it's not.
Done by the Academy.
The critics.
Yeah, the critics. Well, by a panel of AVN insiders.
Okay. All right. Well, I would say that I would make a round of calls to influence the pornographic luminaries that I know, but they're probably all in their late 60s by now.
I'm sure some of them are still performing.
Probably. They probably are.
Speaking of your buddies, buddy Ron got in a lot of trouble.
What is going on with that? I don't really know the whole inside story of this. Here's what you fill me in, but here's what you're talking about Ron Jeremy. And what I know is that Ron is always dogged by these allegations of, you know, he got a little handsy with me kind of stuff. And which Ron is a guy, and I'm not speaking out of school, because if he were here, I think he would readily admit to this. He's a guy who will beg you to have sex with him until, I held out forever. And then finally, I was just like, look, if you'll shut up, okay,
one time. Was it everything that was promised?
Well, that was part of the problem, is there were no promises made.
Oh, see, that's even fucked up.
Yeah, I didn't even get a phone call the next day. Well, what, so you fill me in. I may not even know any of this story.
So a bunch of performers have come out and accused Ron of being handsy.
Mm-hmm.
On set, conventions, and in the current climate of entertainment,
right,
it's been a big no-no. And from what I've been told, Ron admitted to as much in Rolling Stone.
Oh yeah, because there's a Rolling Stone article coming out. Now this isn't rising to like James Dean levels, is it?
Well,
I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, because again, I'm on the outside, but that was like kind of assault allegation type stuff, right?
Well, it was a flat-out rape allegation.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah. So does it? Is it like that?
In the current climate, it's almost worse, because with all the mainstream Me Too and
mm-hmm.
the everyone being empowered, people are making much bigger deal about it than they would have a year ago.
Yeah.
And Ron, I mean, what Ron did isn't right, and he admitted to it, but he's getting a lot of backlash from it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll be interested to see that article. I haven't talked to him in a while, so I haven't heard anything about that. What do you think? I'll ask you a question then. What do you think would have to? Because the first thing that comes to my mind in terms of okay, there's going to be it's a new day, and you know we're conscientious of things we weren't conscientious of before, and all that. If you're going to try to correct that climate in porn world, then what you're going to have to do, the first thing that comes to my mind is you're going to have cameras rolling all the time, and don't have people together outside the view of the set.
It's still just a really weird dynamic, because even when cameras rolling, you'll have male talent, you know, stroking themselves to keep themselves erect in between scenes.
Right. That's actually uniquely part of the job description. You can't make that claim in a lot of offices, but there. Right.
People just get naked in between scenes.
Yeah.
These are just part of the job.
Right.
Performers are going to have to be mindful of other performers' boundaries.
Yeah, well, but to me, I thought there always was that. I thought there was my hard no list and stuff.
There definitely is. It's just one of those things that porn is porn, and you can't change the fact that male talent has to keep themselves erect. People have to get naked.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, you know, when someone says no, it very much has to be respected.
Right.
And they're going to have to, you know, unfortunately drive some people out who can't maintain those boundaries.
Yeah. Well, and you know, maybe there's a whole side of that that I haven't witnessed, but I'll tell you, I mean, my limited exposure to it has always been that it's been the opposite of like recreationally carnal, that it's actually just kind of mechanical.
Oh, definitely.
And, you know?
And 99 out of 100 performers are respectful on set.
Mm-hmm.
Are, you know, do their jobs. There's no complaints about them. Everyone's happy to be at work.
Yeah.
Just the one bad egg.
How'd you get involved in that world? I don't even know if I asked you that question when you sat in on our podcast.
I don't think you did either.
Mm-hmm.
My listeners have definitely heard this story a bunch of times.
Uh-huh.
But the quick and dirty of it is, back in 2009, 2010, Chicago had 7 Burning Angel girls living there.
Oh, yeah.
And there used to be a Burning Angel night at a bar mm-hmm. I regularly went to. Partied with them. Through them, I just met more people. And eventually, I became friends with Tegan Presley and her husband, who were living out here in Vegas.
Oh, uh-huh.
And her husband's like, I'm opening a studio. You should move out to Vegas. I said, fuck it. Why not?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you actually relocated from Chicago to here for that. This must have been right about the time that a lot of it was moving to Vegas anyway, right?
It was before a lot of it moved to Vegas, actually. Oh, okay. I moved here in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And then studio didn't open. Thankfully, I kept a day job from Chicago. I just transferred out here.
Mm. By the way, what were you going to do? More non-sex roles?
Actually, more production.
Oh, production.
Stuff.
Okay.
I never had any desire to be in front of camera.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've 100% never had any desire to be male talent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm equipped to do that job.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of some sweaty man hanging over me while I have sex with 12 of my friends watching doesn't really appeal.
Yeah.
Plus, I like choosing who I have sex with.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I make really bad choices, but I choose.
That's right. The choices are yours.
Yeah.
Now, so you moved out here. Studio didn't open, but you maintained your contacts.
I maintained. I also did a lot of security work for a bunch of girls. I'd go on the road with them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For strip club features, stuff like that.
Oh, okay. There's not too much of that these days, right?
Oh, no. There's plenty of girls still making.
Oh, there is?
Yeah, just traveling around the country doing feature.
Okay, I wasn't sure if there was still a lot of call for the strip club feature. I mean, you see it here in Vegas, but it's Vegas, so I don't...
No, small markets. Oh, okay. My God, the money in small markets. Like Toby's in North Carolina. It's in, I forgot the name of the town, but it's like on the coast, and all there is marine bases.
You know what? That it is the same with Frank's jiu-jitsu seminars. The biggest crowds that he gets are in the smaller markets where, you know, you can throw a rock without hitting a celebrity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the girls do really well there.
Yeah.
And I imagine Frank does too. I mean, I'm hoping his students aren't stuffing dollar bills in his trunks, but...
Yeah, well, you know, it's tomato, tomato. So, okay, cool. So a lot of that went up. So you moved out here and you did that. And then it's porn world is one of those things where it's like you just have to have one person to vouch for you. And then they all know you.
Yeah. And it was definitely always helpful for me that I never had a desire to be male talent.
Yeah.
Almost every dude's like, I want to bang on film.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I want to do production.
Right.
Oh, you want to do production? You want to edit? The industry is much more inviting if you're not just trying to get laid.
Yes. Yeah. Makes sense. Okay. So you did that, and then of course, that's perfect for starting a podcast because you're going to have people to do the podcast with, and then that's kind of where we met you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I was like, cool.
As I said, I was a fan of your guys' show. I was happy to support it. It was fun to sit down with you guys, talk.
Appreciate it.
Talk a little shit to Frank. And
I wish Frank was here. Frank would be doing this podcast right now if he were not. He's in Australia right now doing a dance tour. Now, are you...
Does Frank need a roadie? I mean, I could roadie for Frank.
Yeah, well, you know...
Wait, I'm still in your job, aren't I?
That's right. Yeah, because I'm the backpack guy. Oh, you've heard about this? Yeah,
I listened to the show.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you listening. Yeah, I'm Frank's got his next fight coming up with Fedor Emelianenko in April, and I've been given the honor of being the guy to carry the backpack. Now, if you don't watch MMA, you're like, what? Well, is that an actual distinction? Yeah, because when the fighters weigh in, there is always a guy wearing a backpack with all the gear in it, and he has to immediately give the fighter Pedialyte, his shoes, his, you know, he's like the attendant while this fellow is weighing in. So
is Frank planning to come in at 265?
Well, he'll have to come in at 265.
Or under.
Oh, you mean or under. I see what you're saying. Yeah, he'll be south of 265, especially to fight Fedor, because Fedor is a smaller heavyweight.
Yeah, Fedor usually walks around at like 230-ish.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would think that that Frank will be on the lighter side of
because I know
of
Frank's
himself.
Been different, you know, different sizes throughout his career.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. When he fought Lesnar the second time, he came in at like right at 265.
Right, right. I mean, Lesnar was a guy that cut to 265, right. So he had to. But yeah, I would imagine he'll be a little bit lighter. Yeah.
It's in Chicago.
Yes.
So I was actually thinking about flying home to watch the fight.
You should, man. Well, I'll be there, obviously. And, you know, do a podcast. I mean, come out, do a podcast. And I at some point, we will make Frank available to the podcast. I mean, either we'll do something a few weeks in advance, like if we need to do a phoner kind of thing, or maybe after the fight. I mean, you know, who knows? I'll see what he feels like. He might not care, and we'll do stuff during the week. I'm not sure.
That'd be cool. I mean, if I'm going to be in Chicago with you guys, I'll make sure, you know, it's a fun time.
Yeah, okay, let's do that. Let's do that.
I still have a lot of friends in, like, the bar industry doesn't matter as much to you, but the restaurant industry, I have some friends that do some fine dining.
That's great. Well, I'll tell you what I would really like for us to do is a live phone booth fighting show while we're out there. And so maybe the early part, we'll let's see what day of the week we come in and all that, but maybe we can line that up.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I got some friends in the comedy scene there. I'll talk to them.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, because you got Zany's, you got Laugh Factory, the Improvs.
Yeah.
All the way out in Schaumburg, so you want to kind of avoid that.
Yeah, oh. See, I never got to do comedy in Chicago because of all the times that I've spent in Chicago, it was before I was doing stand-up comedy. Chicago, to me, is a market that I associate with my old band days. I used to play. Tell me if any of these places are still around or you knew of them. The Metro.
Oh, yeah. The Metro theater. Is a landmark.
Okay. So played there. Lounge Axe. Is that still there?
Don't know Lounge
Axe. It's across from the Biograph Theater, it was, where John Dillinger got shot.
I don't think that's there anymore.
Okay. Beat Kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Love the Beat Kitchen.
Yep. Yeah. Elbow Room.
Elbow Room is still there. Okay. One of my buddies manages it, actually.
Oh, right on. Okay. Well, I have one time or another performed in all those.
Yeah. No, those are all great. Great club venues.
Cool.
In Chicago.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that most of them are still there.
Yeah, the Metro will never go away.
Yeah. One time I got, this is the most un-rock and roll moment that I ever had in a rock and roll band. We were playing the Metro Theater, and we were playing there with Soul Asylum and somebody else that I can't remember. Soul Asylum was headlining. Soul Asylum was at their peak. They were
so Runaway Train.
Yes. Dave Perner was dating Winona Ryder. I mean, she was there in the dressing room. This was Soul Asylum at their MTV peak. And, you know, we were all pretty excited about being on this bill. And our bus driver, who was a Euro, would... He made this little apartment for himself in one of the bays underneath the bus, and there was like a trap door where he could be in the bus, lock the bus up and everything, and then open this trap door and crawl down into the bay and sleep. And he would sleep while we were performing, so he could drive all night. And so, like any other night, he did this, not realizing that the band had actually locked itself out of the bus, and all of our rock clothes were on the bus and all the rest of that. You know, we're wearing, well, I wasn't, but, you know, some of the other guys were wearing Hawaiian shirts and flip-flops and stuff like that.
Oh, I'd pay good money to see you in a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah, well, I... that was not what I had on. But still, I was not at my rock and roll best that day. And so we were locked out of the bus, and Graham, the Euro bus driver, was down in his little cave asleep. And it was like 10 minutes before we were supposed to go on, and we were dressed like a bunch of Hawaiian tourists, and we were kicking the side of the bus, and I think with just minutes to spare, he woke up, we got our clothes, and walked on. But that's what I always associate with that night. Yeah.
Near miss.
Yeah.
Absolute near miss. Wow.
Mm. So well, what else? So
speaking of music, actually.
Yeah.
Because it was the day after the anniversary of Dime's death.
That's right. With Jennifer and I, my girlfriend Jennifer sitting here, we were just talking about that before we left the house.
So where were you the night?
Yeah. So I was at, I was doing my radio show in Dallas, and I did a night show. And this was before there was internet, but there was no social media. And so you could look things up on the internet, but it wasn't. The internet was not always instant, you know, and what I remember was I had finished my show. I think I went off the air at 11 o'clock every night, and a guy called me. Now the Pantera guys, Dimebag Darrell and his brother, Vinny Paul, well, the whole band. But even at that point, after Pantera had broken up, Dime and Vinny both lived in Arlington, Texas, and I knew them growing up. And you knew them if you were around there. I mean, that the great thing about those guys is they never left. I mean, they as big as they became, they just bought a cooler clubhouse. In fact, they have a strip club called the Clubhouse in Dallas.
There.
Yeah, you know. So, you know, everybody knew them in town. And so I was wrapping up my radio show, and I got a call from one of our radio station promo guys, the guy that, you know, goes out and puts up the banners and hands out the refrigerator magnets and all that kind of stuff when you do the promotional stop.
The street team guy.
Yeah, exactly, the street team. And he was a friend of theirs as well. And he said, hey, I'm hearing this weird rumor that there was a shooting up there and that Dimebag had been killed. And I remember, because he didn't, you know, again, but before everybody had a smartphone, you just couldn't look it up on your phone. So he was calling me. He was at a radio remote. He called the studio. I pick up the studio line because we had internet access in the studio, and he wanted me to look it up, see if I'd heard anything. And so I looked it up, and I couldn't find anything. And it just, I remember thinking, oh, this sounds hokey. Like, okay, yes, I'm going to look this up, but this sounds like an urban myth in the making.
Shootings like that just didn't happen
no,
in 2004.
Not at all. Not at all. So, and I didn't find anything right away. There wasn't anything on the net. It seemed like it was an hour or two that passed before that news kind of started coming out, and then I found out about that. And I had just seen them maybe a month earlier, because they did, speaking of the Clubhouse, their strip club, their band at the time, Damage Plan, did a record. It was like an invitation only record release thing at the Clubhouse, and they actually performed on the Clubhouse strip club stage. So I'd seen that maybe like a month prior, and then they went out on tour. Well, so that happens, and then, you know, it was obviously very shocking. And his funeral, I went to his funeral. It was in Arlington, where they're from. It was at the Arlington Convention Center, which was a very big space for a funeral. And Eddie Van Halen was there, and Gene Simmons had sent the Kiss coffin because, both brothers were huge Kiss fans, and so he was buried in the Kiss coffin. Eddie Van Halen brought his, if you're familiar with the Van Halen guitar lineage, the yellow and black striped guitar that's on the cover of the first Van Halen album. He brought that guitar with him, and Dimebag was buried with that, as I recall. And then, you know, Vinny, now I see Vinny all the time now because he lives here in Vegas.
Yeah, I've partied with him at porn parties a couple
times. Yeah, and which is, it's nice that now that I relocated out here, you know, he's out here. I see him at all the the concerts we go to and all that kind of stuff. And Jennifer and I went to a pool party at his house last summer, and he's got, I mean, he's still the same guy, you know, which is nice to see after something like that happening, because you know something about him is, I mean, both of them were awesome guys, great guys. But when that happened, you did not see Vinnie Paul out for the, I want to say, it just seemed like the better part of a year. He just kind of went away.
Well, that makes all the sense.
Totally. I mean, when you add all that up in your head, I mean, above and beyond just the horror of seeing somebody shot and killed in front of you, it's your brother. And by the way, it's the guy who does the thing with you professionally that you've never done without him professionally. I mean, it's there were so many things about it that were like, you know, these two were cosmically joined.
Well, and on top of that, the gunman was coming after him next.
That's right. And you know, he wasn't the only guy. There's a couple other guys that were killed. Their security guy, yep, and road crew.
Mayhem.
Yeah.
Bray. And,
right.
Oh, why am I spacing the last guy's name? I totally just posted a memorial to the other victims yesterday.
But yeah, I mean, you know, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, and I've never directly confirmed this with him, but have you ever heard that Matt Brown was in the crowd that night, UFC fighter, welterweight?
No, I've never heard that.
Yeah. One of these days I'll find that out directly from him.
Right?
He is, yeah, and a huge metal fan.
Yeah,
huge metal fan.
I'm sure he was there.
It all makes sense that he would be, but I've never confirmed that with him, but I have heard that story. So anyway, you know, before I left Dallas, I would see Vinny out. I mean, he started to come out again, and he put Hell Yeah together and all that. And but then once I moved out here, I think it was more or less right about the time he moved out here. So it's nice, you know. It's like you see him, and it's like an old Dallas friend. And I think he's the only Dallas friend I have besides the one I live with over here that joined me. I don't think that was his primary intention, but anyway, he does. You know, speaking of Hal Sparks, though, Hal could tell you a story. A few years back, Hal and I were doing a week at the Arlington Improv. Hal was opening over there, and Hal was headlining over there. I was opening for him, and you don't have to laugh at that.
I was laughing at your faux pas.
Yeah, well, I know. The very idea of me being a headliner is comical in and of itself. I know.
Hal opening for
don't
you.
Don't try to clean it up now, man. Well, I know what you're doing.
I'm not. I have no shame in why I was laughing at that.
But I knew that Hal was a big Pantera fan. And so we actually went over to Dimebag's house. And the house, and this was a number of years after what happened, after he was killed, and the house has been kept like as exactly as it was the day he left it. And his been a few years back, so I'm not sure what the situation is with it now, but we went over there, and his Dimebag's girlfriend, Rita, the girlfriend that he had for forever and ever, had kind of opened up the house to us, and there was a caretaker over there, and they just let us go through the whole thing. We went in the guitar vault, we went in the studio, and the crazy thing was, there were things like, I mean, you go in the studio behind the house, and just, you know, the picks and the guitar strings are still laid out, and the little notes scribbled on scraps of paper. None of that had been touched. I guess Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains was over there so much that Daryl had given him a bedroom, and that bedroom was there. The bed was unmade. I mean, just, it was like frozen in time, you know?
Wow, that's crazy.
It was eerie. There were pictures drawn on the wall from, like, you know, when Ace Frehley had been over and he drew a little caricature of himself on the wall. It was like it was very much like it was a man-child's house, you know? There were permanent Christmas lights strung up everywhere and all that kind of stuff. It's the house you see if you ever watch any of the Dime Vision videos. Yeah, that's where
That's awesome. I mean, it's eerie and awesome at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that being said, I'm going to see Travis Tritt tonight later. Yeah.
Not quite as heavy.
I got range, man. I got range. I really enjoy as the guys in Pantera do and did. I enjoy old country music. Most of the country artists that I like are dead, so it's a rare treat when somebody that I actually like is still breathing.
Oh, you definitely can tell those guys like their country. Rebel Meets Rebel is a great
album. That's right. The David Allan Coe album. Yep, for sure.
I'm big fans of those guys.
Yeah.
I was actually supposed to see them in Chicago the next morning.
Oh, well, oh yeah, they would have been there the next day. Wow.
They were playing a Kegs and Eggs show at the Aragon Ballroom. They were supposed to.
Yeah.
I found out I was getting ready to go to the show, and there was a metal DJ named Freak who was on Q101 at the time, and he just gets on air really somber.
Yeah.
I don't know how to tell you guys. I don't know how to say this, but Dime was killed last night in Columbus, Ohio. And when I first heard him, like, this is a really sick joke.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And there were no, you know, probably now enough time has passed that there's people hearing this who were literally children when that happened, that they probably know the name, but they don't have a real-time recollection of when it happened. And, you know, one thing they're probably thinking of is, well, I don't know how that's – would the guy go in the back door or something? Because, you know, now when I go to a show, they're patting me down and they're wanding me with the metal detector and all that. He didn't do any of that back then. Well, they didn't do it.
Some venues, but not a small club like that. Have you ever
– I don't remember ever having it done to me.
Chicago, there was definitely –
well, yeah. Yeah, you come from a
– come from a sketchy place.
You sound like Trump. What the hell is happening in Chicago? They're living in hell.
Well, and what's messed up is if that had happened today, yeah, people would definitely mourn Dime, but no one would really blink that there was a shooting at a show.
That's true. That's, yep, you're right. Sadly, that is very true. I mean, we saw it happen here in Las Vegas. I mean, as much of a tragedy, a horrible thing has happened with the shooting on the Strip down here. It's, I mean, life hasn't really changed that much, you know? I mean, I remember there was a lot of talk at the time about what do we do, okay, how do you keep that from happening again, basically, right? And we were at, you know, we went to a music festival. We went to Cal Jam, I think, the week after that happened. Which was the thing the Foo Fighters put on out in San Bernardino. Now, that was at an amphitheater that had, you know, there's no tall buildings backed up against it. However, they did have, like, lookouts on the top of the stage, you know, cops with binoculars and things like that. So some things like that have changed. But really, when you think about it, like, that situation with the Strip, that... whether or not that concert venue opens again, I mean, there's a million opportunities for situations like that that you're not going to be able to control.
Well, what's unfortunate about how we handle hotels in America is they're soft targets.
Mm-hmm.
If that had been a 400-pound bomb instead of 400 pounds of ammunition,
yeah,
we'd be looking at a lot more than 50 dead.
That's true. That's true.
And you go to other parts of the world, you can't even approach a hotel with a vehicle without it, you know, them run the mirrors under it.
Yeah.
You know, your bags will be scanned. You're going through metal detectors. But America is more concerned with the privacy of guests, especially here in Vegas.
Yeah.
Than they are about the security of the guests.
Well, and not only the privacy of hotel guests, but, and this is where I think we can go overboard, is also the privacy of, you know, I don't want to be on a government registry for my gun, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to have to go through a licensing process that's government overreach. I mean, you know, if you listen to Phone Booth Fighting, we must have done three at least in-depth podcast discussions as that whole thing played out. And my co-host Frank Mir, in addition to being a UFC fighter, is also tied for John Popper of Blues Traveler as the biggest gun nut that they're 1 and 1A that I personally know. And but, you know, he was saying at the time, listen, that I'm going to maintain my arsenal, yeah, but and I want to have the right to do it, but that doesn't mean that we can't exercise some common sense measures here. And, you know, we were talking about it Frank was saying he thinks it's, and again, this is coming from the biggest gun guy I know. He was saying he thinks it's crazy that you can buy a gun without having to go through a course to operate it.
I'm 100% with Frank on that. Actually, when you guys were talking about it on air, I was pretty much talking at my phone. Like,
oh yeah,
just like. I agree.
Well, he drew the analogy. He's like, you know, imagine, you know, you can go buy a car, but you can't drive it off the lot without a driver's license. Imagine if we started letting people do that just on the promise that at some point they'd get a little proper driving instruction.
Right. It's crazy. It's not a great analogy, unfortunately, comparing guns to cars just because you're going to use your car every day.
Yeah.
People go, oh, well, they don't need that. They're not going to use their gun every day.
Mm-hmm.
But you're a threat to yourself carrying a weapon if you don't know how to use it.
Yes.
But let alone the people around you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've 100% been a proponent of mandatory training. I think CCW training is a joke. I have a Nevada CCW.
Mm-hmm.
There's one 8-hour course, and I was arguing with the instructor through it.
Mm.
You know, some of the principals he was teaching people, I'm like, you're going to get someone killed in a real gunfight.
Yeah.
You know, he was stuff like, oh, yeah, keep your safety engaged. So I have a lot of experience, you know, doing armed security.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, if you get into a real firefight, something as simple as disengaging your safety could be the difference between life and death.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because you pull your weapon, you go bang, it goes click.
Mm-hmm.
Your shot.
Yeah.
People need to be very proficient with their weapons. They need to learn how to clear the jams. They need a lot more training.
Yeah. Clear the Jams was my favorite MC5 song, by the way. No, it's very true. And I think it's also, Frank and I also, you know, talked about the need to, and I think this applies to anything, not just Second Amendment stuff, but getting rid of the whole slippery slope argument. Because whenever somebody says, well, you do that where, you know, we get rid of bump stocks, where do you draw the line? Well, you draw the line right there.
Well, we already drew a line.
There's lines drawn all the time. You know where the line in porn is drawn? 18.
Yep.
Okay. Well, gosh, you know, you set a limit at 18. Where are you going to draw the line? 18.
Hell,
I was
on a set 3 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And there was a performer there doing a non-sexual, like just an extra in a scene.
Uh-huh.
She had an expired license, and they're like, yeah, we can't have you on camera.
Mm-hmm.
They know she's 18. She's there with people that know her, but she can't prove it.
Mm-hmm.
So for legal reasons, they're like, we can't have you on camera.
Well, see, there we start requiring ID, and where are we going to draw the line? Right there.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the crazy thing. It's that lines are drawn all the time. Well, you set a speed limit at 65 miles an hour. Where are you going to draw the line? 65 miles an hour. Then you can have a discussion later, if you want to, about making it higher or lower.
We already don't allow fully automatic machine guns.
Exactly. You know, well, what do you mean I can't own weapons-grade plutonium? The terrorists might have it, and then I need that to defend myself. Well, no, you don't. We drew a line. Sorry, you're south of the line on that one thing.
Though I do really agree with Frank that we're lucky that that guy was using a bump stock.
Oh, right. Yeah, as far as not being more precise with his with his weapon.
Yeah, he hit under 3% of what he was shooting at.
Yeah.
It's a horrible loss of life. I'm not trying to discount it, but
no, and you know, we keep talking about Frank like he's here, but listen, he is my gun guru.
He's bigger than life.
He is bigger than life. He's the guy. I'd never fired a gun until I knew Frank and went out and shot him with him, and I've done it a number of times since then, but what he and I have talked about is the fact that, you know, when people say any shooting scenario you're going to bring up, you know, movie theater or school or whatever, and people start saying, well, it's just too bad that everybody in that theater wasn't armed. And Frank will immediately say, oh, no, that makes it worse. You don't want everybody armed. What you want is you want a few well-trained people armed.
Definitely. And really, what's going to save you more than you being armed in a lot of cases is knowing where the exit is.
That's right. And so, you know, talking about you know, eliminating things like bump stocks, like high capacity magazine clips. The reason for that is so that you don't take a really bad shot and make them far more effective in the period of time until you can get to them to neutralize them.
This is true, but I will, on the high capacity end, I will argue the fact that if you have a gun and you're shooting at unarmed targets, like, you know, Sandy Hook, it doesn't really matter what kind of magazine you got there. They can't return fire.
Well, that's true, but you can fire a lot more rounds in a much shorter time of space. He's talking about, like, imagine we're, you know, church shooting or movie theater, you know, some of these things that have happened before. Frank's armed at all times. So, but he doesn't have a high capacity clip on him at all times. So the idea...
Really? He doesn't have a
15? Not at all times.
He doesn't have a 15-rounder on him? I find that hard to believe.
Well, he might. I don't know. I'd have to... Maybe he does. I don't know. He gets... It's funny. He doesn't like me to reveal all of his secrets. Well, like... Yeah. He sometimes he'll tell me, he'll talk about all these things, but he leaves one or two locations on his person out where he has a weapon. But just the idea being that if somebody, you know, goes off, if somebody's nuts and they're spraying bullets around the place, you want them to have to reload, for example.
But someone who's proficient, that's under a second.
Yes, but how many people, and I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but if you add up all the mass shooters, you're not talking about a lot of expert marksmen.
True.
I mean, you're just talking about crazy people.
True. Bringing it back to the dime situation.
Yeah.
Have you ever read Vulgar Display of Power by Chris A?
No.
He's a rock photographer who did a biography on the other victims of that night.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the chapters is a play-by-play by eyewitness accounts of how it went down.
Oh, well.
And I am unfortunately completely spacing on the shooter's name because I didn't bother to remember it.
Yeah.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
He actually dropped and reloaded during...
Yeah. That's right. I do. I remember that. Yeah. Remember hearing that.
The capacity of the magazines, I don't feel, will make that much of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe limiting 100-round magazines on rifles,
mm-hmm.
that's one thing.
But mm-hmm.
15 rounds in a handgun, a 5-round difference isn't going to make that big of a deal.
Well, okay, but right, I see what you're saying. So, I mean, within that conversation, there's a whole range of sub-narratives.
Yeah.
But again, what we don't need right now is somebody sitting here going, well, you get into all that, where you're going to draw a line.
Right.
You just drew a line. Okay, well, maybe we look at 100-round rifles. Maybe we don't look at 15-round handguns. Okay, that's a line we can discuss.
Well, and the problem is a lot of the legislators are making knee-jerk reactions, like New York banned over 7 rounds. Well, they don't make magazines for semi-automatics that are under 10 for a standard-size handgun.
Mm-hmm.
So their police force now had a bunch of illegal weapons.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Our legislators need to be better educated on what they do. What
they do. You know what? I will say this. If you're going to take money from a lobby, I think you should have a lot of pressure on you to be able to, at the drop of a hat, articulate that lobby's position. You know, I mean, I saw a lot of people saying, well, I'd never even heard of bump stocks. Well, you sure took a lot of money from organizations that champion their legality to not have any idea what that is.
Definitely. And John Oliver actually made a really good point about this. The reason the NRA's position is real easy, because their position is always no.
That's right. It's FU. It 100%. You want to talk about not drawing a line. I mean, it's always no. And they exist, and they thrive. I started to say survive, but they thrive financially on the slippery slope argument. And you know what? That, and just getting, I mean, we
went from being a funny podcast to being a political one all of a sudden. But.
Yeah, well, I but that's okay. Sometimes there's humor in reality and current events, but you know, that's why the slippery slope argument bothers me, not just as it pertains to gun rights, but really anything, because you'll hear people say this when it comes to, I don't, you know, something like recycling. Oh gosh, well, why are you gonna recycle that bottle when, you know, that can over there ended up in the trash? Well, because that's better than you not doing anything. But the people who really don't want to do anything, that's an excuse that they give themselves. to rationalize not doing anything. I can't do everything, so why do anything?
Right. But if they thought about it of, well, if I don't do something, that's now two cans sitting on the ground.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And if all three of us left our cans on the ground, well, there's four cans on the ground now.
Right. That's right. That's right.
People tend not to think beyond their own personal sphere.
Yeah. Very true. Very true.
Wow, we got heavy.
That's okay. Do I need to lighten the mood a little bit? You were asking me about how my roast battle went the other night.
Oh, yeah.
I do stand up comedy, and I got involved in my first ever roast battle. Now, roasts have kind of made a comeback. When I was a kid, it was like Dean Martin celebrity roasts and stuff like that. And now they've with Comedy Central over the last few years, they made a comeback. Well, the comedy club that's here at the Stratosphere on the Vegas Strip, called the LA Comedy Club, hosts a roast battle, and this was their fourth season of doing it, I think. And the guy that runs it called me and said, "Hey, one of the guys." It starts out as a 16-man tournament, and the guy that runs it called me and said, "Hey, one of the people dropped out," because it plays out over like 4 weeks, four rounds. And he said, "Do you want to do it?" And I said, "Yes." And then I'm like the opposite of the NRA when it comes to comedy. I just say yes to whatever gig. But I said yes, and then I got off the phone, and I immediately realized that I'm the easiest target of all for this stuff. I look weird. I think weird. I've done a bunch of weird stuff. Like I looked at all the comedians in this thing, because what you're doing is you're writing insults. You know, you've got to get up on stage, you've got to insult them, and then you also have to prepare to have rebuttals for whatever they say about you. And I was looking at this going, I wish I was insulting me. I wish I was writing for me, because I am a much easier target. I don't know what this says about my self-esteem, but I think I am much easier to insult than any of these other people. So,
well, I think you're also probably a bigger name than some of the other people. You've been in radio forever. You have a very popular podcast that you're on twice a week. I looked at who some of your competition is. I couldn't pick them out of a lineup.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's the downside of being easily Googleable, you know, where somebody searches your name and a whole lot of weird stuff comes up. So I was sort of prepared for that, and I was, you know, writing my rebuttals accordingly. And to my surprise, I had some success doing it. I got through three rounds, and then I lost the championship. So I took the silver medal. But
first loser, that sucks.
Yeah, first loser. That's right. It's exactly right. Do you know I have had the aspiration? I've claimed for years I'm going to do this. I've never done it. At some point before I'm gone, would like to dedicate myself to learning the names of all the people who ran for president and lost. Because when you think about it, these people were the second closest in a four-year period to being the most powerful person in the world. They came up just short. They came in second. A whole lot of people supported them.
And some of them came back and won. Nixon
right.
lost.
That's right. That's right. Sometimes they come back and win, but no one remembers them otherwise. And so I would like to have the party trick. It's a good thing I have a girlfriend now, because this would not be a great way to pick up girls. To, you know, at a party, be able to entertain everyone with, you know, hey, throw out an election year and I'll tell you who lost. So I periodically I'll work on it, and I can go all the way back to part of FDR's administration.
So, which one of his terms? Because he had three terms.
Yes, he did. Dewey is, let's see, no, Dewey beat Truman. Who was the guy? There was a guy that ran against FDR. Oh, hell. What is the guy's name? The only reason I remember him is because, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt was a very progressive first lady. I mean, she would be even by today's standards, but certainly for back then. And, you know, she was, I think later on she became a UN ambassador. I mean, she was Hillary Clinton before there was a Hillary Clinton. But the guy that ran against Roosevelt that year And they would actually, the ads, I mean, they weren't even ads. They were news stories, the news reels you would see like before movies would play in theaters because everybody didn't have a television. But this guy was actually championing the fact, he was showing off in these news stories that his wife, like sitting in a rocking chair doing knitting and stuff, like essentially she knew her place.
Family values.
That's right. That's right. My wife knows her place. She's not gallivanting around like this Eleanor Roosevelt.
She's pumping out children like she should.
That's right. That's right.
Crazy to think where we've come in 100 years.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of, I mean, it's kind of foreign that Melania is not really talking. She's just kind of there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the first ladies always take up some sort of they champion a cause, you know, like Barbara Bush's was literacy. Michelle Obama's was nutrition. I mean, in more recent years,
Nancy Reagan was Say No to Drugs.
That's right, Say No to Drugs, Different Strokes, cameo appearance. But, you know, back then, I mean, I think in more modern years, some of the stuff has become, it's not just like a niche cause. Like, I mean, Hillary Clinton was the original healthcare reformer and that sort of thing, which that didn't go well for her. But now, what I find is amusing about Melania Trump is that when she does champion a cause, it's bullying. She wants to cut down on cyberbullying, and to which I always say, you know, she can't even get one of her kids to quit calling people ugly names on the internet. I don't know how she thinks she's going to have success with anyone else.
Or her husband.
Well, that's right. Yeah. That was one of the kids I was referring to. Yeah.
The big kid.
Yeah. Exactly.
We've taken a step back.
Yeah.
Say what you want. Like, while I was here, my uncle lives in town, and he is pretty conservative. So I've been going over talking points with him when we were at dinner the other night. And it's interesting to hear the other side. I just messed up right there calling it the other side. We're all goddamn Americans.
Mm-hmm.
By calling it the other side, that's how we alienate people. That's how we don't come to compromise.
Right, right.
And that's one of the things that we as Americans should do is reach out to other Americans, hear their point of views, and try to understand them.
I agree with that. I think what you're fighting, though, is an element of human nature. Like, to me, one of the biggest political fallacies is when you hear a politician say, and it's usually when they're running during the campaign, they'll say, you know, the people of America are tired of the partisan bickering. They are ready for us to get to work and do our job, and they're tired of the us against them. No, they're not. They're actually, that is something that they understand. What our culture understands is us against them. It's why we love football. It's my team versus your team. My team's awesome. It's going to win the Super Bowl. Your team sucks. On a more human level, you know, I'm blaming that group over there for my problems and my shortcomings.
Well, and this is part of the reason that I don't know if it's ever happened, where every time that we're actively at war, the president gets reelected.
Yeah.
Because we, as a people, are, we have an enemy.
Right. That's right. Yeah. And it's right. That's something everybody can, or at least historically, has united behind. But this idea, I mean, I agree that that's something that needs to change, but we need to not pretend like there's some mystery reason why all these politicians do this divisiveness and it doesn't work. It absolutely works. That's why they're doing it to begin with. That's why they get all wrapped up in these. And, you know, when the economics of it, the things that involve actual math and numbers, become a little boring. Anything that, you know, parallels the line of a Real Housewives plot is very appealing to the average American, because that's something that they can all indulge in. And it's like eating dessert for dinner every night. I mean, that's something people need to check themselves on not doing, if in fact any of this is really going to change.
We can only hope. I mean, we can't improve as a country if we don't all come together, at least compromise.
Yeah.
You can't have your way all the time.
Yeah.
No matter what your way is.
How about just being able to explain why you think the way you think? How about just being able to articulate that? you know. And if you find that you can't, spend some time on it until you can, because one of two things is going to happen. Either your positions will be fortified because you'll feel like you're arguing from a position of strength and knowledge, or, dare I say it, you might modify your viewpoints because upon further reflection, you realize that, you know, maybe you think a little differently than you thought you did originally, and don't be afraid of that.
Definitely. At least in my social media feeds, like, you know, my Facebook with my friends and such, everyone's in favor of socialized healthcare.
Yeah.
So sitting down with my conservative uncle, he's 100% against it.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually was able to articulate reasons why he's against it.
Mm-hmm. Does he like the VA?
He actually volunteers at the VA.
Oh, okay. Well, we got to get rid of that. That's socialized medicine 101. That's going to have to go away then.
Well, his problem isn't so much the socialized medicine mm-hmm. as in the corruption within the socialized medicine.
Oh, well, sure. Okay. But are we throwing the socialized medicine out with the bathwater, or are we saying that there needs to be, better monitoring of the VA?
Well, I think we definitely do. Because he was telling me he's a volunteer.
Yeah.
And when he clocks in, though he's only working a five-hour shift, he has to clock in at the volunteer's office, and they make him clock in for 8 hours, even though he's only working five.
Mm-hmm.
And he's driving for the VA. Then he has to go clock in with the driver's pool for another 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So on the clock, he's working 16 hours, though he's only working five, which doesn't matter to him because he's a volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
But paid employees, it works the same way.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, listen, it's you know, if you're going to have something, anything, you're going to have to nurture it. You're going to have to monitor. You know, if you're going to have a kid, you've got to be responsible for raising it. Now, you could make an argument that, well, the easiest thing to do would be to not have any. Sure. But I don't want to tell you you're not entitled to do it if you want to. I'm just saying there's a responsibility that comes along with it. So do I think there should be a VA? Absolutely. And I don't know anybody who disagrees with that. You know, I don't know. You know, it's amazing. You never meet an old person that wants to get rid of their Medicare.
No, not at all.
And that is socialized medicine. So it's these are things no one wants to get rid of, but if you're talking about they can be improved, great. Let's talk about improving them. But just these scare words like socialism in general, you know,
because people just automatically go socialism, communism.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So you're out on anything socialist. If your house gets robbed tonight, are you going to call the socialist police department, or are you going to call your private security force? Well, my guess is that unless you're one of the few that might actually have a private security force, you're going to do like the rest of us do, and you're going to call the police department that you pay taxes for. But guess what? Other people who are afforded the exact same level of protection pay more and also less than you do for that same protection. That is called socialism.
What are you talking about? I'm going to take my AR-15. I'm going to deal with the problem myself.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Let me know how that works out for you.
In California, I will go to prison.
Yeah.
No. Hell, not even healthcare. Who built these roads?
That's right. That's right. You know, everything cannot be privatized, and everything shouldn't be privatized. But I'll tell you something, though. I'll tell you something. You know what? You still have amazingly when you talk about like public works and roads and things like that. You got toll roads. Now, how can a toll road, which inherently always has, inevitably always has, the more convenient route? How can a toll road exist next to a publicly funded socialist thoroughfare? Well, it's a premium for the convenience, for the directness of the route. And so it's the same reason why when Walmart opens up down the block, Neiman Marcus doesn't get nervous. Why is that? Everything's cheaper at Walmart. I mean, Neiman Marcus, I'll bet they can't stay in business. Amazingly, they do, because they cater to a clientele that can afford the best of everything, and then those people will never shop at Walmart, and vice versa. There's a whole lot more people who will go to the Walmart because they can't afford Neiman Marcus. Same thing with the post office versus FedEx. People who have the means will always get the best. And that's okay. That part of it, I'm okay. That part is inherently American, and that's okay.
That's okay, but on the flip side, corporate welfare isn't.
It's not okay with me, but it's amazing how the same people, the same, corporate business types who will decry the, you know, the welfare queen mom with the five kids or whatever, they will come to the taxpayers with their handout to build a new stadium for their NFL team. And let me tell you, nobody knows how to beg for money like corporate welfare recipients. I mean, when they come asking for money, it's a hefty bill.
It's crazy. Like, if you can't afford to employ people, you shouldn't be in business.
I agree with that. Yes. And you know what? To me, that is what the free market system is meant to be. You know, we're here at Starbucks right now, speaking of mom and pops. this cup of coffee that's in front of me here costs, I think, $2.45. And the reason it costs that much is because I paid that, okay? And some other people did who were in line in front of me. So that's why they set that price. Now, if they charge $5.60 for that cup of coffee, I'm not going to buy it. There's going to be some other people who aren't going to buy it. Well, the true free market way would tell them, okay, we've outpriced our customer base. We have to lower the cost of that cup of coffee. But the corporate welfare recipient would go knock on all these doors around this neighborhood and say, hey, listen, we're from the Starbucks, and I don't know if you heard, but we're charging $5.60 for coffee now.
And we create jobs.
That's right. We create jobs, but we're hurting for business, so we need you guys to kick in some money to subsidize us. You'd get laughed off of their doorstep if you did that. But if you got an NFL team, it's a different story.
Well, there can even be an argument made, not that I'm going to make it, that an NFL team at least provides a distraction, provides something for the community.
Oh, and that's why they vote for it. That's exactly why they support stuff like that. Listen, I got a, you know, my whole theory on things like NFL teams are that, and listen, I cover, mixed martial arts. I mean, it's a UFC's a very, very popular enterprise, so I understand it. But the thing is that particularly as it pertains to things like the NFL, my thought is this, that, you know, by the time the average guy gets to be in his mid-40s, things have not turned out well. Nothing like what he'd hoped. He has a job that he hates. He might be married to somebody he doesn't like that much anymore. And Sunday is the only day where those two things leave him alone. He doesn't go to work, and his wife goes out somewhere, and he puts on a jersey, and he gets out his fantasy football roster, and he uses pronouns like we, you know, we had a great game today. We made a big halftime adjustment when we were down going in the locker room. And that's all he's got going for him in his miserable life. And if you can connect your product to somebody on that level of like a de facto religion, not only do you have a license to print money, you got a license to kill if you want it.
Oh, hell. NFL players have made, you've talked about this on Phone Booth.
Yes.
NFL players have committed a lot of crimes.
That's why it's amazing now to watch everybody get upset about the national anthem protests. And you're within your rights to be upset if you want to be. That's fine. That's a conversation we can have. But this is a product, this NFL, that since the early 2000s has seen almost 1,000 arrests, which have included hundreds of domestic violence incidents and two murders, but
only
this
two?
Yeah, two, right, yeah, well, you know, convictions, but this is going to be the
how
thing.
Many arrests
hundreds
I mean for murder
oh yeah I don't know don't know, you caught me. But it's like, you know, you look at numbers like that, and then you're like, okay, but this is the thing that's really causing everybody to say, okay, this is a bridge too far.
Well, and it's a great illustration of American short-term memory is the fact that up until not that many years ago, players didn't even come out during the national anthem. It wasn't until
right.
the military
yeah.
paid the NFL to have the players out there to look more patriotic to increase in, you know, enlistment numbers.
Yeah, well, it's same is like putting in God We Trust on money. You know, I think that happened in the 50s.
53.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people think that that's something that, you know, happened in 1776. It was not.
No. This is not a Christian country.
Yeah.
God's got nothing to do with it. But back to your roast.
Sure. Yeah, right. So anyway, so I came in second in the roast.
Yeah. My listener base is like, politics.
Yeah. Yeah. Who are your listeners? Do you, just by and large, if you were to describe to people, because, you know, I'm sure you hear from people on, I mean, you obviously know I am, but like you hear from people on social media and things like, what are your, you know, is it mostly male? Is it mostly female? Is there an age range?
I would wager that it's 18 to 35 year old males mostly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people that are probably a little more liberal leaning, though. Mm-hmm. Got blasted on iTunes for when we had Chris Gore on, and Chris bashed Trump quite a bit.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And they're like, the episode's unlistenable.
Oh.
Hate when they get political.
Yeah.
But we don't exist in a vacuum. Unfortunately, this affects right. us all, so we talk about it occasionally.
Right.
Especially get a little alcohol in me, and
yeah.
it happens.
Yeah.
But I would assume that a lot of our fan base is into adult entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we do have a lot of adult performers that come on the show.
Right.
Other than that, I really don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
And, hey, guys, if you're listening to this, tweet at me. I respond to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to do... Let me ask you a question about your... Because I guess you'll be back in Vegas here at the beginning of the year to collect your AVN award. Now, are you going to... I know a lot of these adult performers during AVNs will have after parties. Are you going to host your own after party? Should we get that together?
Oh, we should. We should. No, I will probably be at a bunch of the after parties. I don't think I'm quite at the level to host just yet.
No, well...
My breasts aren't quite luscious enough.
Yeah. All right.
No club is paying me thousands of dollars to show up.
Yeah, well,
they're paying one of the Kardashians' boyfriends. I don't even know which one of them, but, like, the boyfriend is... I've seen billboards for him around town to host parties.
Oh, is this Scott Disick?
Yeah.
Yeah, I always see him. It looks like it's his birthday every other week. There's always a birthday celebration going on. Well, I don't know... I guess that's fine for him. The one boyfriend of a Kardashian I had anything to do with, I would suggest stays 100 miles away from porn awards. That's nothing that he needs to have any part of.
Oh, if he stays sober, Adam, he'll be fine.
Yeah, I don't. No. Not you. Didn't see him like I saw him.
Oh, hey, he could just hire you to keep you around and keep him alive.
Well, we cheated death once. I don't know if we're gonna be as lucky the second time around.
Oh, it's a 3-strike rule.
I don't know about that. He barely survived his... Of course, I doubt that was his first strike. I think that was just the first one I saw. Is he out? Like, I saw some pictures. I think he's out partying again or something. I don't think I was a strong enough influence on him to walk the straight and narrow.
See, you just got to, you know, be like, hey, Lamar, I will keep you sober. Just chain him up in your basement. Teach him the ways of Richard Hunter.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe he can be one of those, you know, athletes that goes from another sport to MMA.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, you know what? I don't think that guy was so big, I don't think he could weigh 265 pounds. I'm guessing he was well north of that.
Go fight in Ryzen then.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We get him like a freak fight over in Japan. Yeah, I guess that could work.
Come on. That'd be great to watch him fight some average-sized Japanese man.
Yeah, that's true. Shinji Aoki. Make that fight.
Chain him in your basement. He only gets to leave to go to Drysdale's.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be good.
You'd save his life. You'd do a mitzvah. See, I'm already practicing for my rabbi character.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what you... What I know the term, but what is that?
A
what's the literal trend? Okay. That's what that means. It's a good deed. Okay. All right. Well, I guess I am Lamar Odom's mitzvah. Yeah.
If he had died on your watch, would you have had bad repercussions at work?
Matt's talking about the brothel I work at, by the way.
Oh, yeah, for my listeners, sorry.
The day that Lamar Odom came in and overdosed. I mean, I think I would have still been seen as maybe doing whatever I could have done, but the way that it played out was more... it was way more involved than I thought it was going to be. I actually, I typically, don't shy away from doing media hits, but just in general. But with that was actually one thing that I thought, okay, the tasteful thing to do is just to release a written statement. You know, we're hoping for the best for Lamar. We did everything we could. We, you know, had no knowledge that he, you know, had drugs on him or in his system or anything.
We have a very staunch anti-drug policy.
Exactly. All that, and leave it at that. But, if you know anything about, the guy, that owns the brothels, Dennis Hoff, he does media, and, he wasn't going to let this be an exception. So I did have a brief thought that what I was going to do when all the media started showing up to interview me, that I would get them to just... I didn't want to be on camera at first. And then after that, I said, well, if it's got to be on camera, can you just shoot me from the side? And the first... I think CNN was like one of the first ones that I did. And they shot me from the side. And I got a text message from goes over an MMA junkie, and the text message just said, dude, we can clearly tell that's you. I'm like, all right, well, never mind.
Were you wearing the bandana on CNN too?
I might have been. I can't remember that. Boy, that there was 72 hours of all that followed that was just a blur. Actually, like, lived out there at the brothel for a couple of days. Normally, I commute back and forth back into town, but it was 24/7 out there for about 3 days. Yeah,
that's crazy.
So, are you driving back to LA tonight?
I am.
Oh my gosh! All right,
because I'm a crazy person.
Yeah,
because I don't want to drive back on Sunday because that's horrible.
Yeah, I've done that drive. I've done that drive a lot. So I know. Hey, you know what? I got a Jewish question for you, because we're sitting here in my neighborhood, and on Saturdays, we get a lot of the Jewish folk that live in the area walking, because they can't drive.
Right.
And they're all wearing their that same outfit. So the deal is, they're Orthodox, right? And from sundown on Friday to sundown on Saturday... Is that the deal?
That is the deal.
We don't drive. We're going to walk everywhere. They're probably just walking to their temple and stuff like that. I know we got some of those around.
I mean, if you're super Orthodox,
mm-hmm.
you're not even allowed to flip light switches.
Yeah. Okay. So I see everybody out a lot doing that. And I thought I had the basic beats down, but I just wanted to make sure I understood all that. Yeah.
Well, and what's crazy, in New York City, there is a... Because technically Orthodox Jews are allowed to do things within their home.
Yeah.
There is a line that goes around New York City, goes around Manhattan, that a rabbi ordains on the Sabbath to make everything within that line technically someone's home. So Orthodox Jews in New York can still do things.
Wow, that sounds like a real best of both worlds scenario.
I forgot what outlet did it, but there was an outlet that did an article on the rabbi who... every Friday goes and makes sure that the line is intact, because if it's not intact, it's invalid.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, what a
gig. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. But now it's Saturday as we tape here, and the sun is down, so it's party time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
break out the wine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, a lot of Orthodox Jews like scotch.
Okay.
Which I'm like,
didn't know.
I didn't know
that.
I'm a really bad Jew.
Oh, yeah. Really? You don't say.
As I eat my bacon right now.
Even though you play Orthodox on screen.
Yeah.
In reality.
A really bad
Not show. So much. Okay. Very but, good.
I worked, in one of my various security gigs, I worked. Jewish events will hire armed security for just, like, social gatherings in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
And I worked an event, like, it was, like, a youth mixer. And the rabbi is like pounding scotch during this.
Hmm.
And I'm just like, wow, I didn't think scotch was kosher. But
you're like, I know porn stars that don't drink as much as you do.
Oh, yeah. And the minute I was off the clock, the rabbi's like, you sure you don't want a shot? Like, I have a gun on my hip. I'm wildly irresponsible at times, but I'm not that wildly irresponsible. Yeah.
Did he ask you any uncomfortable questions? Like, have you ever met Sidney Steele? Anything like that?
No. Oh. I don't think he really realized who was working for him.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah, I was told by like the guy who got me the gig, he's like, whatever you do, don't tell the rabbi you're Jewish.
Oh, okay.
Because he's like, the rabbi will not be happy about it, you know, someone who's Jewish working on the Sabbath.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. Even when it's in a security capacity, I mean, you're any work. Okay.
Hire a goy for that.
Yeah. All right. Very nice.
I keep meaning to ask you.
Sure.
So what was the knockout punch that got you knocked out of the roast battle?
Well, the guy that won it all is, he was a defending champion, so he'd won it before. And honestly, he's very good. Stylistically, he's very good, and he no-sells everything. So anything, Joe, Jesus Christ, what is his last name?
Did he beat you this badly?
I know, I blocked it out. It's not Conti, it's not Cortez, I'll think of it in a second. Anyway, but he gave you like zero reaction to anything you hit him with, and his insults were good. The only thing is they were a little generic. So meaning like, I think you got four cracks at somebody basically, four jokes, and I believe two of his jokes were pertaining to, they were like gay jokes, which would be fine if I were gay. But I was kind of like, these sound like they were just recycled for someone, you know? And so, but they were good. And, you know, everybody, there's a lowest common denominator that'll laugh at, you know, that dude sucks cock, you know? So it was something along those lines. Yeah.
Is it taped? Can we hear it somewhere?
Oh, yes. Yeah. In fact, if you listen to, I should just post them all up on YouTube. I'll probably do that. But Phone Booth Fighting has a YouTube channel. And if you listen to the podcast, then we played clips of the first two rounds of the roast battles already on previous episodes. And I'm sure we'll put this one up as well.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear it because I really enjoyed what I heard.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Well, hopefully you can come out to a live comedy gig here sometime. So
yeah, I'm just bummed I wasn't in last weekend. Yeah. I was originally supposed to be. I was
right.
To come out for the final.
Yeah, that would have been cool. Hopefully that, or we'll be out in L.A. doing some stand-up. I do know that L.A. is our biggest domestic market on Phone Booth Fighting. So to all of the L.A. listeners that we share with And Now We Drink, we appreciate you.
Hey, I appreciate, you know, the listeners I got from doing the show last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got a lot of feedback, like, loved you on Phone Booth Fighting.
Good. Glad to hear that. Glad to hear there's some symmetry.
Is there plans for you guys to do a tour? I mean, I know, like, Callan and Schaub are out
right.
touring all the time.
Yes. So that's definitely, we definitely want to do live dates. Frank's schedule with his commentary, it's not so much the fighting stuff, it's the color commentary that he does for fights with ACB, has him traveling globally every week, almost, at least every other week. And so that's what kind of keeps us from doing more live dates, but we'll definitely do more of those. And I think once he starts fighting again in Bellator in April, that fight with Fedor, and then moving forward, there'll be more opportunity to do some live shows along the way. So yeah, because I like performing in front of a crowd. I mean, to me, that's my preferred way of doing it. So yeah, I look forward to us doing that.
Hey, it would be really awesome if you guys could set up something live before the fight. You really probably don't want to have Frank on stage after the fight.
Man, he always, you know, even when he wins, a lot of times he looks like he's been in a car wreck. It's jarring the first time you see it. And what's really weird is his family, who's grown up, I mean, his wife's been with him as long as he's been a fighter, and his kids have grown up with it. It's nothing to them. You know, dad's limping around with a, you know, hematoma protruding from his skull or whatever, and it's just, well, they're going to Disneyland, you know, in a couple of days as soon as the swelling goes down, so they're all happy.
Well, I mean, I'm curious to see what Fedor shows up.
Yes, Yeah. Yeah. Arguably the greatest heavyweight of all time, Fedor Emelianenko. That's a fight a lot of people had wanted to see for a lot of years between him and Frank. And finally, you know, finally we're going to get it. So hopefully it's en route to Frank, you know, claiming the Bellator heavyweight title. That's what the tournament is all about. But regardless of any of that, we're going to finally get to see a dream fight that a lot of people wanted to see all those years that Frank was in the UFC and Fedor was not. And that's what kept it from ever happening before now.
Oh, as I said, I want to fly to Chicago to actually watch that fight. Like, that's
cool, man.
That's how excited I am about it. I'm like, yeah. I don't watch Bellator all that often.
Yeah, yeah.
And to go to a live card, especially fly out of state for it, because it is two of my favorite fighters.
Yeah.
Finally, you know, clashing heads. I wish it would happen 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, 10 years ago, that would have been crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's going to be a lot of fun in April, and I'm glad it's in Chicago. I haven't been back to Chicago in a long time, and that'll be a good place to do the fight, and it's going to be fun to have the podcast, you know, be able to experience it along with Frank and share it with all our Phone Booth Fighting listeners. I am really going to have to urinate. Should we?
Well, we can pause it.
Should we? Okay, cool. Hold on. Let me hit the bath.
We are rolling again.
I can't believe you've done this whole podcast in shorts. It's cold out here, man.
Chicago, man.
I guess so. I don't live in cold climates, so it's cold to me.
I haven't in 6 years. Almost seven. Yeah. Believe me, I'm getting there. I'm kinda starting to get a little chilly. So I know we were talking about besides the MMA stuff. Before we wrap for the night, because I know you gotta get to your concert. Do you have any solo appearances? Are you going to tour on your own?
I would certainly take comedy dates. And, you know, Hal and I performed together. You're talking about Hal Sparks at the beginning of the show. We've done a number of shows in a number of different places. I haven't gotten to work with him in a while, but I always enjoy doing that. You know, the main thing for me is just, I think when you are involved in, you know, different simultaneous projects, they kind of keep you from doing one over the other with too much frequency. I mean, Frank and I have a great relationship with what we do with the podcast, and, you know, to his credit, in fact, I just took a break for a second. He was texting me from Australia about when to hook up with him and tape our episode we need to do this weekend. So, you know, I don't know. I did. Yeah, I told him what I was doing. I think it's one of these things where it's kind of like, you know, if you have multiple kids, you can't just focus on one of them too much. You know, you gotta spread the love around a little bit. So,
or ignore them all.
Yeah, or that. So, I mean, yes would be the short answer to your question, but, you know, one of the nice things about Vegas is there's so much opportunity. There's so many venues and things like that. You know, even open mics, or they're like AA meetings. You can find one every night of the week somewhere.
That's awesome. It'd be good to, like, see you come out and, you know, do some spots in L.A., though.
We definitely need to do that. For sure. I mean, L.A. needs to happen. So I probably need to make about, you know, we go out there quite a bit just for fun and work sometimes and stuff like that. But I need to make more of a point of doing sets when I'm out there, for sure. Yeah.
But, hey, let's get you out of here. I'm actually starting to get cold, and you have a concert to go to.
Now that I pointed it out, right, yeah, absolutely.
It's one of those things where my brain's like, oh, yeah, it's cold out. What are you doing?
I appreciate you having me, Matt. This was a lot of fun, and I could talk to you all night. You're a great conversationalist, and as I said,
Stop it, I'm blushing.
No,
that's just me cold.
Yeah,
sorry.
As I said, it's one of those things where, you know, you supporting our Phone Booth Fighting podcast introduced me to you and introduced me to your podcast, and I subscribe to that, and we made a good friend out of it. So anything I can do to support, and now we drink, other than actually drinking, which I don't do, I'm more than happy to contribute.
Hey, I really appreciate it. It was super fun. Where can my audience find you?
So Phone Booth Fighting is a twice a weekly podcast. It's available on iTunes, Stitcher, Radio, Google Play, SoundCloud, wherever podcasts are available. Feel free to look us up, subscribe, and phoneboothfighting.com is the website. And then if you're interested in finding me on social media, and can't imagine why you wouldn't be, Twitter and Instagram is at Richard Hunter.
And their Snapchat is at Phone Booth Fight.
That's right. That's right. You can even follow us on Snapchat if you're diving that far down that rabbit hole.
Oh, I'm just amused because Frank screws it up all the time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's got one job in the formatics, and he hits it about 50% of the time. It's true.
And always, if you don't know by now, for some odd reason, you can always find me at Matt_Slayer on Twitter, Matt Slayer on Instagram, Matt F. Slayer on Facebook, Matt Slayer on Snapchat. And Now We Drink is the podcast at www.andnowwedrink.com and at nowwedrink_ on Instagram, because someone stole the real name.
It happens.
Well, from a very cold Las Vegas with my iced coffee, have a good night, all.